Welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of What's Working. I'm Cam Marston. What's Working is brought to you by Regions. The focus of our show is workplace and workforce trends, and we're going to continue to get into these things. I want to thank Michael Silver. He was our guest on yesterday evening's show, the 6 p.m., what we call the original edition, which is more of the deep dive into the content where we meet some of the local entrepreneurs, the local businesses, as well as get national business experts to tell us what's going on out there. Michael really inspired me. Michael is the master of what I call the COVID pivot, and we've heard that over and over and over and over again on this show. And it wasn't until I got Michael on the show that I learned exactly what that is and how it looks. And I'm thinking it's because it's taking a little time since the introduction of COVID to our economy to figure out what this pivot is and how it looks, and particularly how it looks in the rearview mirror, what I did in looking back to pivot to accommodate this new COVID economy. They're the drive-in guys, and his business is essentially entertainment. They couldn't entertain the way they used to, so they figured it out. And if you want to hear that show, it's inspirational in how he learned to pivot, and he's an inspirational guy in himself. You can listen to it at the podcast, on the podcast. Go to whatsworkingcam.com. Again, whatsworkingcam.com, and you can find his show there as a podcast, as well as every other show we've ever done. We're getting into them now. We got over 100, well over 100. His pivot has led me to the following. Put this down on your calendar. July 15th at noon. Mark Sanborn has been on this show before. If you're somewhat familiar with the name, he wrote a book called The Fred Factor. He's written a total of 8 books, one of which was called The Fred Factor, and has published millions of copies of this book. Mark is going to lead our first What's Working with Cam Marston webinar at noon Central on July 15th. We are going to make it available to the listening audience. We want you involved. Mark is going to, let's see, where is this topic? I've written it down. He and I talked about this yesterday. The post-COVID work world, the 3 most important changes you need to make now. Mark is keeping up with what's going on out there with customers, with customer service, and with the needs of teams in the post-COVID work world. And he's going to lead us through a 1-hour webinar on what he's learning. Mark is an expert on many things, leadership, customer service, as well as sales, and you're going to want to be involved in this. Now, as we brainstormed, we said, well, we should find a local outfit that's willing to sell, let's say, pizza to these office places. As the office manager pulls everybody in around the conference table and says, hey, we're going to listen to this webinar, we're going to watch the webinar, we should all have a pizza. And we were going to try to find a pizza organization that would be willing to give us a coupon code to order a cheap pizza in support of this webinar. Do you have any idea how hard it is to find a pizza place that's willing to go through with this that doesn't look at you so skeptically? In fact, I called Domino's up in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and got nowhere. I ask you, my people, my friends, if you have a connection with a local organization that's willing to help us out by offering a discount for the webinar for the office managers, the sales managers that pull their team together to watch this webinar with Mark Sanborn, we'd like to incentivize them by offering a coupon code for a pizza or something that can be delivered to the office. I want to hear from you. Cam@whatsworkingcam.com. That's my email. Cam@whatsworkingcam.com or 251-260-8100. Call us at that number, 251-260-8100. You can also text us there and let us know who you know, who we can work with to get content out there about ordering a pizza. July 15th, Mark Sanborn, noon Central. We're going to talk post-COVID work, sales, and customer service world. On the show today, I got Dan Lyons coming up, an old friend of mine. Can't wait to talk to Dan again. Teaches team building to some incredible organizations, and we're going to learn what he's been doing since things shut down for him. But most importantly, some of the most notable rules of teamwork. And when you hear his background after the break, you'll understand why it's so important. We're going to have the 1:52 p.m. summary, like we always do, the best ideas that Dan brought to us in his time there. Find us on social media. Find us on Instagram. Find us on Facebook. And we're going to cap it off today with our first Take It or Leave It with Jay Stubbs. He sent us a list of what he can't wait to leave behind from COVID and what he can't wait to take with him and incorporate into business going forward. You're listening to What's Working. I'm Cam Marston. We'll be right back with Dan Lyons of Team Concepts. We're back. You're listening to What's Working. I'm Cam Marston. What's Working is brought to you by Regions. And on the line with me is Dan Lyons. He's the founder, president, and CEO of Team Concepts. He teaches team building models up in the East Coast through rowing. Dan's background is quite impressive. As an oarsman, I mean, and this is not something that we find much here in the Deep South, but as an oarsman, Dan rowed in seven national teams, won a world championship in 1986. Dan competed in the Seoul Olympics in 1988, and it was inducted into the U.S. Rowing Hall of Fame in 1987. He's a Naval Academy grad, went to Oxford, has coached with Oxford, Stanford, Drexel, Georgetown. He is an elite rower, folks, and he teaches team building through rowing. Dan, thank you so much for your willingness to work with us. Welcome to What's Working.
Cam, thank you for the invite. I'm excited and ready to go.
Good.
It's an honor to be here.
Thank you. It's nice to talk to you again. Your background, Dan, with the Navy, with rowing for the national team, with rowing on the Olympic teams, I have a strong bias, because I rowed for a period of time, that rowing is the ultimate team sport. What is your comment on that, and what did it teach you about building teams in your current profession of team coaching?
Well, I think that rowing is certainly known as the ultimate team sport for a number of reasons, but to me, all sports are metaphors. All sports have the same basic elements to them that allow them to be used as amazing examples of how to create and lead a high-performance team. So rowing is a little different because the focus is on a complete alignment of behaviors and patterns and power. And it is a lot about how you utilize, how you use your power in order to lead and in order to create exactly what you want. But you have to use your power with everyone else. And rowing is a sport that teaches extreme precision. When you are applying the power, it has to be applied the same time, not necessarily the same amount, but the same time as everyone else through the length of a fairly complex and long stroke.
Yeah. Your teaching methods have been adopted by Wharton School of Business, Harvard, Booth, Darden, I'm reading them off here, Georgetown, Columbia. You work with the U.S. Army. You're soon to work with NASA and the State Department. There are a lot of people that are buying into your methodologies due to much of what you've just said. Give us, so let me introduce you to my listeners here. Most of them are 45 years old or older, typically, and many of them are male in positions of influence and leadership in the world in which they exist. Talk to us, talk to these people and me about how to form and keep a team going. Give us some of the basics.
Okay, absolutely. Well, the first thing that has to happen, and we actually just got off the phone with a fairly large wine and spirits company, actually, and we were talking to some of their people about these very issues. The first thing that has to be done is the recognition that everybody wants to feel part of something bigger than themselves. So when you're part of a team, you have to know that everybody else wants to be part of a team too. It may not be the team that you're on, but they do want to be part of something bigger. And that is huge across the board, no matter what you believe in from a spiritual sense or an aesthetic sense or anything like that. Everybody wants to be part of something bigger. The second thing is that everybody wants to feel valued. And that means from a moment-to-moment basis, they have to feel a sense of worth. And so your job, my job as a leader, and everybody who's listening, your job as a member of or potential member of any team or as a leader is to never forget those two things and to try to create these what we call ties that bind people together, knowing that they want to be part of something bigger, and you do too, and knowing that they want to feel valued. So how are we going to help everybody to be personally accountable to each other?
I want to interrupt you here real quick, Dan, because it reminds me of a conversation I had back years ago when I was delivering a workshop for a tree care company, ironically. I won't forget this. The association manager pulled me aside and said, Cam, the tree care business, these people that climb into the tops of the trees and cut them down and clean them up, etc., is full of a type of personality we call cowboys. The cowboys love to go out on the ropes. They love to take the risks. They love to make the climbs. They like the dangerous stuff. They are not great team players just because of their desire to take these high risks by themselves. And we have to kind of rein in the cowboys, or else there's extraordinary risk that's taken there. She said that, to me, Cam, when you're delivering your content, I want you to try to address the nature of these cowboys. They're necessary to our business, but they are the riskiest part of our business. Certainly there are people out there listening right now that says, yes, I understand about the team, but I prefer to work alone. I prefer to be a renegade, or to, as the tree care industry's talked about it, I prefer to be a cowboy. Imagine yourself as a manager or a leader of one of these cowboys. How do you address the issues of making them a part of the team?
Right. Well, we all have that in us, I would argue, because we all want to feel that we are special. We all want to feel that we're important, and the cowboys are doing that because they are in a position where they're noticed, where they're not just going into themselves and creating what it is they want, but they're getting recognized for it. So in rowing, it's the same thing, because we also have single sculls. We also have people whose personalities are very different than a crew personality. When I was at when I was in high school, I was a single sculler, and I thought that I was a lone wolf. But as soon as I got into an environment where there were other people and I understood what it was like to be part of a crew, that all went away. Because part of what I realized was that in getting with other people who were just like me, they were driven to be recognized, they were driven to be part of something bigger, I didn't lose my individuality. Far from it. I actually became more or less exalted or glorified as a result of assuming the power of everybody else. So you've got lone wolves out there who think that they want to be completely alone, but they actually don't. They want to be recognized in the same way that everybody else is. So you get all of these people together, and you allow them to feel their specialness. You allow them to feel their value. And you allow them to understand that, in fact, they're being supported by all the other people who are catching those trees when they fall, and all the other people who are taking those trees away and cleaning up after them, and that they have to support each other and in order to get what it is the tree climber really wants. The tree climber wants to experience everything that he or she is capable of doing when they get up there, but they want to be recognized for it, and make no mistake about it. And so from a leadership standpoint, the leaders and the team members have to understand that that's exactly what's happening, and they bring them together, not by diminishing the tree climbers, but by exalting them, if that makes sense.
How would you say that? Imagine you're the manager listening right now, and he or she has one of these renegades, one of these cowboys that I'm talking about. How do you begin to bring the cowboy into the group? They offer some remarkable skills. They have, going back to the tree climber thing, they have they don't care as much. They're willing to take more risks. But how do I begin to pull them into the group by what I say?
Well, you get them together first. So, you get your tree climber, and you say, you know, we're having a meeting here, and this is one of the things which basically has to happen every morning. Frankly, in every business, it should happen every morning, which is what we used to call in the Navy a morning quarters formation, which is no matter where you are, ship or sea, you're at 7:30 in the morning, you are standing in front of your officer. And they're talking about what's going to happen that day. They're reminding you you're in the Navy, that kind of stuff. And I would do exactly the same with our tree guy, is I would bring him into a meeting every morning with everybody else who is supporting them in their effort, and outlining what is going to happen that day and who's going to do what and how they're being supported. I'm not saying that we're going to stop them from taking the risks, or even from enjoying that. We're not at all. We are basically reminding them on a daily basis, and it pretty much has to be done, by the way, with people like that, especially. I would do it twice a day, at the beginning and in the end of the day. If I wasn't talking to them as a group twice a day, I'd be talking to individuals all through the day, because that's coaching. That's what has to be done, is a reminder of all of the people who are dependent on you, and vice versa. And that never goes away. It's just like being the head of a family or anything like that. You are reminded of that on a daily basis. And even people who are lone wolves aren't really lone wolves for the most part, because they've got family, they've got people who are dependent on them. And so the leaders have to take those lessons and remind the lone wolves of that, and make them feel part of something special and important. We don't diminish them, we exalt them.
Interesting. My wife, as you may remember, is a volleyball coach, and she refers to this process as brainwashing. She says, if I repeat it to them enough, they begin to believe it, and I've got to make sure I'm repeating to them the things that are necessary to use your term, exalt the team. And there are those that like the spotlight, there are those that just want to help the team, and I've got to repeat the correct message to the team, as well as the correct message to each individual, to make sure the team becomes number one. She calls it brainwashing. She can build the outcome she wants with enough repetition. Sounds similar, huh?
Yes, it is. And again, the most important thing is, especially with these people who need to feel valued in a more extroverted way, they need to have it spelled out for them to a certain extent, especially for them. We can't give them the feeling that they are being in any way diminished. We have to allow them the reality that they are, in fact, being glorified. They are assuming the power of the team. And I think that's a really big deal, because as soon as you start to feel that you are in some way being brought down to some sort of normal, then people with that kind of personality are going to detach. They're going to feel diminished. Let me give you a quick example.
Dan, we got 30 seconds. Give me a 20-second example.
Oh, boy. Okay. Columbia University, 8 or 10 years ago, there is an exercise that we do called banner development, where you basically create accountability to each other. And there was only one time when we didn't do this exercise. We've done like 80 programs a year here. And in that time, when we didn't do it for this program up in New York, we had people actually leave the program. It was the only time we'd ever lost anybody in 20 years of doing this. And it was because we did not give to them accountability to each other. And as a result of that, They didn't feel any obligation to stay, and they didn't.
We'll be back with Dan Lyons. He's the president, founder, and CEO of Team Concepts, based up east somewhere. He Navy Academy grad and left the Navy at the rank of lieutenant commander, teaching us about teamwork and leadership. We'll be right back. Listening to What's Working. I'm Cam Marston. What's Working is brought to you by Regions on the Line. Dan Lyons, founder, president, CEO, Team Concepts. They teach the 8 secrets of inspirational leadership. Dan, thrilled to have you on board. We had worked through 1 and 2, though we hadn't labeled them that. Let's start with number 3 now that we're back from the break. So, inspirational leadership, secret number 3, define the performance objective. Tell us about that.
That's fairly key. This is the first of the latter 6. So the first 2, everybody wants to feel part of something bigger and everybody wants to feel valued, are the 2 ones that we always keep in our back pocket. Once we start the actual process of getting things done, then we go with secret 3, set the high performance objective. So there's a difference between the performance objective and the high performance one. High performance basically is the best you can do, not the best you think you can do, the best you actually can do. And from a leadership and management standpoint, you're always trying to get people to do the best they can do. And that's what this whole thing is about. The practical element here is you have to know what it is you're doing. So when you come into a project, any project, whether you're in construction or in cooking or in teaching or whatever, we have to know exactly what the end state is going to look like, and what the objectives are, and how we're going to get there, which is the process. So you'd be surprised, actually, at how many people, especially in large organizations, actually don't understand what the objective is. They come into a big team or they come into a team and they just assume that everybody knows what they're doing. But a lot of times they're just going on automatic. So from a management standpoint, before you do anything, you have to understand what the objective is of the project or the team or whatever and have it clearly laid out.
How do you go about making sure that it's clear, Dan? I can see how objectives can be nebulous. Do you have any rules of thumb or checklists for saying, here's how to write and articulate a clear objective that's understandable by everyone?
Yes, it has to be something that is in clear English. It has to be something that is not complex. Again, conversations today with people who are working on some pretty high-level stuff, and and my job basically is to try to make things very clear in language that can easily be understood. So, for instance, we were looking today at a global movement for change, on the issues that divide us. That's fairly clear. And you can be extremely obtuse in trying to work through that. But this, again, is a daily exercise. That's why it's so key to meet with your team either virtually nowadays or live on a daily basis and to say, first of all, what are we doing here? That's very straightforward. What are we doing here? Why are we here? And today, what is it that we're going to do to get to those two things, the why and the what? And that's exactly what I do every morning with my team, which is, this is our role. We create and lead high-performance teams. And we create and lead high-performance teams in the following organizations right now. So how are we going to move in that direction today with this organization?
And it makes it clear to everybody what their goals are, what their obligations are, and yet they've been brought in. I'm making some conjecture here because of the unique talents they can offer towards that effort. So they know what their talents are. They know what the goal is. And then I want to get to secret number four on the 8 secrets of inspirational leadership, which is ennoble the effort.
Yes, absolutely. And ennoble the effort is the spiritual part of this. And frankly, that's why it's number four. It's the core of it. Because you can have an objective and you can walk away from that meeting that you just had at 7:30 in the morning and saying, what does the old man know in any way about this? I'll just sort of do 5 or 10 other things. It doesn't really matter to me. It doesn't mean anything. But what the leader has to do is give purpose to what the objective is to basically make it noble, is to say the reason that you're doing this is the following. You are helping people. You are moving things forward so that there will be an outcome that is desirable at the end that will make you feel better, that will make the team feel better, and that will affect all those around you in a positive way. And that's something which has to be completely reiterated again and again, because the first thing you forget is the beneficial nature of all of the stuff that you're doing on a daily basis, because it's hard, no question about it.
One of the themes that I'm noticing thus far, Dan, is the repetition process of so much of this by the team leader, that they repeat the ennobling the effort stuff, that they repeat why it's important to be a part of the team, that they repeat why the team is bigger than the individual. Can you comment on the repetition? It seems like it would get tedious.
Well, it's got to be, the ideas have to be repeated, because it takes all of us a while to transition to where we're changing our behavior. So in order to change behaviors, we have to basically build a new road. We have to literally build a different physiological pathway. And the thing that makes this not tedious is the genius of the leader. Because the leader, him or herself, has to be able to say the same things in different ways. So we're not always repeating that, we might as well just give them an email and just have them go to the same email every day. But that's going to last 2 days and then they're going to ditch it. What the leader needs to do is to be able to use different stories, different metaphors, different ways of saying the same thing, and speak to the individual. Because you are speaking to each individual soul, and that's exactly what you're doing. And you are inspiring them every day to see the truth of the words.
It's interesting that you use the term spiritual. That's what I thought when I saw ennoble the effort. You're compelling them to something beyond themselves. And folks, let me take a break here and just say, if you want to get this list of the 8 secrets of inspirational leadership, I've set up the text service so that you can get the link to Dan's website where you'll find this. Text What's Working to 44222. Again, What's Working to 44222. Follow the instructions. You'll get that linked to the Team Concepts website, and you can find these 8 secrets of inspirational leadership that Dan and his team teach at business schools all across the country. It's really very impressive, Dan, what you've done. So secret number 4, ennoble the effort. Secret number 5, empower individuals with team synergy. That seems almost a contradiction.
Yes, not that it's a contradiction, but these things go from 3 to 4 to 5. You set the performance objective. Once you do that, you ennoble the effort. Once you do that, and only when you do those two things, by the way, people become empowered, meaning they take personal responsibility, which is secret 6, for what is going on here. Until they're empowered, meaning until they're given the power to do for themselves and for their team what they think is right, then all you have are drones. You don't want drones. You want individuals who are powerful in their own right, but who are going to be aligned in the same direction as everybody else on the team. They have to feel personally special, and that's why ennoble the effort is the core of this. They're not going to feel special unless they feel part of something that deserves their full attention. Once they do, then it's a natural empowerment. You don't even have to do anything. It's just going to happen because they're going to want to see the mission through the same way that you do and the organization does. But if they feel it's somebody else's mission, somebody else's problem, they never get empowered. And then they never take secret 6 on, which is take personal responsibility for the outcome.
I want to get into secret 6 in just a second, but my attention is drawn to the number of times that you've used the word feel. You may need to make people feel special. They need to feel empowered. They need to feel a part of the team. There are a lot of us out there that say, you know, emotions do nothing but get in the way. If we could just turn our emotions off, we'd all be better for it. Or the team would function best if we all left our emotions at the door. Who cares how you feel? Just do your job. Are you willing to comment on that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's basically the difference between reality and fantasy. I mean, we all are left brain, right brain creatures. The left brain is that analytical side to us that is all about process, and there's no question we need process. Absolutely, we need the circuitry in the process to understand what we're doing. But that circuitry, that process, has to be filled with energy, and that energy comes from the right brain, and that's your emotions. That is the feeling that's actually filling that circuitry with electricity, or those gas lines with gas. And otherwise, they're just printed lines on a page. They look nice, and you would love to fill them with something, but they're empty. So emotions are there. Every single one of us has emotions. Every single one of us has a right brain. The leader's job is to be able to align those emotions, not ignore them, but to use them. And that's why we talk about ennobling the effort. We elevate the emotional response, so they turn that emotional response into energy. And that energy fills the process with power, and then you move forward on an aligned path. But if you're ignoring that, then you're basically ignoring 50% of what makes us tick.
We got 1 minute left, Dan. Let's touch on, we got secrets 6, 7, and 8. Give me the most valuable of these 3. I've told people where to get your secrets. They can come find them. They're all somewhat self-explanatory. Pick one of the 3, and let's finish up on that one.
Positive, engaged energy. I will say you take personal responsibility, and then you celebrate the journey is secret 7. And you have to celebrate because it has to be a beginning, a middle, and an end to every process. It can't feel like the process is unending, because once that happens, you lose motivation and so forth. And the way you keep this going is secret 8. Secret 8 is the tie that binds everything else together, which is positive, engaged energy. So sine qua non, you know, again, without which there is nothing. You're either positive or you're negative. So if you've ever been tempted to think that there's, you know, 10 or 12 other variants in the middle. There isn't. You're one or the other. There's no neutral energy out there. So if you're positive, you are exuding power that's positive. If you're negative, you're exuding power that's negative, and negative energy will drain people.
Dan Lyons is the president, CEO, founder of Team Concepts. Their idea is 8 Secrets of Inspirational Leadership. They teach it through the model of rowing 8 oared shells out on the rivers of the East Coast as well as out on the West Coast. An old friend of mine, very accomplished in his work. Dan, thank you so much for your willingness to share with us today.
Thank you, Cam. It is my honor and pleasure. And to everyone out there, good luck and keep positive and good things will happen.
Appreciate it. We'll be right back. Special thanks to Dan Lyons. Folks, when your client list includes Wharton School of Business, Harvard School of Business, Darden School of Business, that's University of Virginia, Georgetown, Columbia, you got to think, hey, maybe they're on to something. There are 8 Secrets of Inspirational Leadership out of Team Concepts. This is what Dan has developed. It's well worth your time and attention. I'm happy to see that a number of people have already downloaded these things. If you want a copy of it, text What's Working to 44222. You will get a link. Follow that link, those instructions. You will get an access to that list of Team Concepts, 8 Secrets of Inspirational Leadership. Now, the 152 moment is the recap. And easily enough, the 8 secrets are already kind of recapped for me. And the one that I want to articulate is, there are 8 secrets, and I could read secrets 1 through 8 to you. But the one that stood out to me is everyone wants to be a part of something bigger than themselves. And I told Dan about the cowboys that I used to hear about in my work with a particular industry association. His comment was they want to be a part of something bigger too. Their attitude may be, I'm unique, I'm different, I'm individual, I'm a risk taker. But deep inside, they want to be some part of something bigger. And it is our job as team leaders to make sure that they know that they are. The second thing that came out in Dan's comments to me was the importance of the repetition of so many parts of being a member and being a leader of the team. It's a constant repetition in unique ways each time to make sure it's said differently, yet frequently, what the goals are. And the final thing that I caught from Dan's conversation, and we might have to get him on the Wednesday show where we get deeper, is ennoble the effort. Make it he used the term spiritual, a spiritual quest to fulfill the team's goals. I love that. All right. You may recall that not long ago, we initiated this concept in the What's Working franchise. I love that word, the What's Working franchise. Take it or leave it. What are you going to take as a result of the COVID economy? What are the new ideas that have been thrust upon you that you're going to continue with? And what are you going to leave? What can't you wait to leave behind? I'm interested in hearing your results from that. You can contact us at Cam at What's Working Cam as an email, or 251-260-8100. Again, 251-260-8100. That's the phone/text line. Tell us what you're going to take. Tell us what you're going to leave behind. Shortly after we initiated this idea, I got contacted by my friend Jay Stubbs, and his list was long. I said, I can't read this, Stubbs. It's too long, so we're putting it on the air. Jay, thank you for your time. Welcome back to What's Working.
Hey, Cam, how are you doing today?
I appreciate it. I know you're out supporting your son in his golf tournament. I appreciate your willingness to step aside and recap these ideas for me. Let's start with what you're going to take. What has the COVID economy taught you, and what are you going to take and keep as a regular part of what it is that you do?
Well, I have joined my teenage son in that I have taken the shaggy hair look. I've given up trying to make an appointment to go get a haircut, Cam.
Yeah.
It's just too difficult and too expensive. You and I talked about that about a month ago. So I'm keeping some shaggy hair. I'm not shaving every day. That's kind of fun, getting that 5 o'clock shadow both days of the week, sometimes 3 days of the week. Just kind of being a little bit more relaxed because there's too much pressure and other things that we're doing, handling 4 kids, work-related issues, opportunities. I just decided to take all of this and stay a little bit more relaxed.
So the COVID economy has put you in all of us, frankly, as business people, as leaders, in a pressure situation. And one of your outlets is you're taking a little bit of this looser dress code, this more loose appearance code, let's say, to heart. Shaggy hair, 5 o'clock shadow, more time. And this is not something that you would have done had this not happened in mid-March, correct?
Oh, that's correct. In a normal world, I would have been having multiple appointments a week with different financial service professionals, advisors, risk management consultants, doing part of my job. But now I'm not having those meetings. They're more Zoom meetings. I can fake it and put on a dress shirt, and I've got shorts on underneath. I'm not lying to anybody. They all do it the same thing that I'm doing. But yeah, every day is a golf short, a golf shirt, comfortable slacks, some comfortable shoes, and things I'm leaving. I'm not going to be buying those expensive suits or shoes or even sport coats anymore. I've got plenty in the wardrobe to kind of get me through all of this. And if I'm not putting on a suit, but you know, now once a year, twice a year, for the rest of this year, no need to go clothes shopping. I hate to say that for some of the clothiers out there, but that's just my take on it.
Oh man, I feel you, and I feel the same way. I put on a pair of leather shoes this past weekend for the first time in I don't know how long. They were polished, they were looking fine, and I thought I hadn't put these on since early March. And it makes me feel so bad for our friend Nelson out at the airport who's been shining shoes out there forever. He's had to have taken it on the chin, but I'm not so sure that those things are ever coming back. I might leave those behind. As much as I love a good pair of shoes, the discomfort and the rare need for them makes them something that I'm probably going to leave behind a great deal, too. What else are you going to leave behind, Stubbsy?
Well, how about some things I might want to hold on to for convenience? I'm keeping that Wi-Fi hotspot I got a couple of months ago so I can work anywhere, anytime. I'm going to keep the later start to the day. Gone are those 5:30 in the morning rituals where I had to get kids to school. I'm going to keep the later start to the day. I'm still getting my work done, but the days seem to go a little bit longer. Keeping that DoorDash account for food delivery, man, that's been convenient when you're not at the house trying to get things done and your kids are begging for a meal. And I might be ditching the fancy dinner. I hate to say that, but the experience just isn't the same with face masks and sitting so far apart from each other. I've got a lot of good friends in the restaurant industry, and I hope they do well, and I hope they recover. But I'm just as happy going down to my local taco joint and grabbing a good box of tacos.
Yeah, you know what?
That's just easy and convenient.
My wife and my anniversary is this weekend. We were trying to figure out what to do, and we went through the fancy dinner idea, but thought, I'm not so sure it's what it used to be. Maybe when it'll come back, that's something we'll do, but I'm not so sure it's used to be what it used to be. Stubbs, I appreciate it, man, and best of luck to your son. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Cam. Talk to you later.
Folks, as we wrap up today's show, I want to remind you of something to get on your calendar. July 15th at noon Central, we're going to put on our first webinar. We're inviting Mark Sanborn. If you've ever heard the book, The Fred Factor, Mark will be the guest of that webinar that day. He's going to take us through the three most important changes that you need to make now, the three most important changes you need to make now as a result of the COVID economy. That will be Wednesday, July 15th at noon Central, and we're getting some ideas on who can deliver food for the offices that choose to do so. All right, you're listening to What's Working. We'll have another show next week. Have a good weekend.